Welcome to Wild Utah, the podcast of the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. I'm Dave Pacheco. In a recent episode, we introduced exciting new materials that explain the role of America's Red Rock Wilderness Act in mitigating the climate crisis and protecting biodiversity. The climate aspect is the central piece of this information, and the research behind it is rooted in a commissioned report produced by EcoAdapt, a nonprofit organization whose goal is creating a robust future in the face of climate change. EcoAdapt set out to quantify the effect that designating wilderness in Utah's famed Colorado Plateau, Red Rock Canyons, and Great Basin region has on both climate change adaptation and climate mitigation. Laura Hilberg is EcoAdapt's author of the report titled, Contribution of the America's Red Rock Wilderness Act to Climate Change Adaptation and Mitigation Efforts. Thanks for joining us, Laura.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So we'd like to start out by having you tell us a little bit about yourself, your role at EcoAdapt, and then introduce us to your organization.
Sure. Well, I live in Western Massachusetts, and I've been working as a scientist for EcoAdapt for about 5.5 years. EcoAdapt is a nonprofit organization based in Bainbridge Island in Washington, and we solely focus on meeting the challenges of climate change. So we spend our time helping people apply a climate lens to the work that they're doing, which ranges from conservation to land management to forestry, city planning, public health, and everything in between. We do that by teaching people how to evaluate potential impacts to climate change, generate solutions, and figure out how to implement them and monitor their progress. We also do research to figure out what kinds of adaptation people are doing, how best to support their work, and what strategies are most successful. And we maintain an adaptation resource database called the Climate Adaptation Knowledge Exchange, or CAKE for short. And then finally, we also host a biennial conference that brings together adaptation professionals from across the country.
So the Contribution of America's Red Rock Wilderness Act to Climate Change Adaptation and Mitigation Efforts is the report that yourself and EcoAdapt produced last year. The report's goal was to quantify how much climate change adaptation and mitigation comes from permanently protecting the large wild landscapes of Utah, with adaptation being how we adjust to the inevitable aspects of climate change, and mitigation being the measure of both reducing the amount of carbon going into the atmosphere and drawing down the amount of carbon already out there. So let's talk about the first of these two categories, adaptation. In what ways would passage of America's Red Rock Wilderness Act contribute to climate adaptation?
Well, as you mentioned, climate change adaptation refers to the ability of ecosystems or human communities to cope with or respond to the impacts of climate change. So in this case, we're thinking about the likely impacts of climate change on the plants, animals, and natural ecosystem processes on Utah public lands, and then considering whether permanently protecting these lands would improve the ability of these ecosystems to handle what's coming. So we found that there are three main ways that wilderness protection would contribute to climate change adaptation. The first is protecting climate change refugia, which are areas of the landscape that are protected from the most extreme changes. The second is increasing landscape connectivity, which allows species to freely move around the region. And then the last is preventing surface disturbances, which exacerbate the impact of climate change on species and ecosystems.
Okay, so let's take these one at a time. Tell us a little more about the first one, climate refugia. It's the concept that wildlife populations may have to adapt to their changing climate by shifting their ranges, and that the Red Rock Country, because of its varied typography, lends itself to adjusting and adapting very well. So explain that to us in a little bit more detail.
Sure. So climate refugia are found in areas of the landscape that are protected from rapid, extreme changes in things like temperature and moisture. They often occur in places like mountain ranges, where species have the potential to move upslope towards cooler, high elevation areas as air temperatures get warmer, or in places where there is a permanent source of surface water, like around springs or perennial streams and rivers. In these areas where the changes that are happening are a little less extreme than in the surrounding landscape, species that are otherwise struggling might be able to persist, which reduces the risk of extinction, prevents the loss of genetic diversity, and buys them time to adapt to climate change. These refugia can also prevent an entire population from being wiped out by an event like extreme drought or severe wildfire. Another way that refugia are helpful is by supporting species that are shifting their range in response to climate change, by providing them what we call stepping stones, small habitat patches that can support them as they move slowly across the landscape. So we looked at studies that talk about where climate change refugia are most likely to be found, as well as maps and other sources that describe conditions in the Colorado Plateau and Great Basin ecoregions where the proposed wilderness lands are located. And we found that the Colorado Plateau in particular has a very topographically and physically diverse landscape. And that suggests a high likelihood that there are lots of potential climate change refugia in these areas, and that permanently protecting them is critical to preventing the loss of plants and animals in the region.
Well, that's fascinating information. I think it's intuitive to so many people who visit this region who understand that it's so broad and varied in its elevation, its altitude, its rivers, its canyons, that it just seems so logical that what you just explained is reality. So, Laura, if you could, let's dive into the second part of adaptation. Tell us a little bit more about the concept of landscape connectivity. So Utah sits at a real unique location in the continental United States in what some call the spine of the continent, making it a significant linkage between other Western iconic landscapes like the Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, Glacier, and Rocky Mountain National Parks. Explain why this is so important where Utah lies.
So making sure that high-quality habitat patches are connected to one another is important. It allows species movement and gene flow across the landscape, and it reduces the risk that smaller isolated populations of plants and animals will be wiped out. It also reduces the risk of extinction and facilitates access to those suitable habitat patches or stepping stones that I referred to earlier, and those help species shift their ranges in response to climate change. So as you mentioned, the lands that would be protected by the America's Red Rock Wilderness Act have the potential to play a pretty significant role in increasing habitat connectivity in the western U.S. because they include a lot of large ecologically intact areas that connect to existing wilderness and national parks. So they would help create corridors of high quality habitat that species could move through in response to climate change. And that's another factor that can help prevent the loss of biodiversity over the coming decades.
So for fans of wild places everywhere, that makes so much sense. Tell us more about that third factor of climate change adaptation. How would preventing surface disturbances contribute to climate change adaptation?
Yeah, so that was the third major benefit to wilderness protection that we talked about in the report, which has to do with preventing surface disturbances, such as livestock grazing, off-road vehicle use, mining, and oil and gas development. So all of these disturbances cause things like vegetation loss, soil compaction or erosion, damage to biological soil crusts, and water quality degradation. And these impact the ability of ecosystems to stay healthy and adapt to changes. Climate change is likely to make these types of human disturbances even more of a problem. So for instance, warmer, drier conditions are going to make disturbed soils even more susceptible to wind erosion, particularly as severe droughts become more frequent. Ecosystems that are already degraded are also much more likely to experience negative impacts from climate change, and they're less likely to be able to recover from them. So preventing these disturbances is a clear benefit of wilderness protection, and it will help preserve intact ecosystems that can continue to function and adapt to change.
Okay, so let's talk about the second of those two main categories, climate mitigation, or reducing the amount of carbon and other heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere. How would passage of America's Red Rock Wilderness Act contribute to climate mitigation with respect to the amount of fossil fuel resources under America's Red Rock Wilderness Act lands and the greenhouse gas emissions associated with those resources?
So there are two ways that climate change mitigation occurs. The first is by reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and which primarily means keeping fossil fuels in the ground instead of extracting or burning them. So we estimated the amount of unleased fossil fuels that are in the ground beneath the proposed wilderness lands That includes oil, natural gas, coal, oil shale, and tar sands. We know that if the America's Red Rock Wilderness Act was passed, those fossil fuels would not be extracted. So that means the greenhouse gas emissions associated with them would never enter the atmosphere. They'd be permanently sequestered underground. We estimated that the greenhouse gases associated with those fossil fuels would be around 24,000 million metric tons of carbon dioxide, and possibly up to 35,000 million metric tons. To put that into context, releasing that entire amount of greenhouse gases, 24,000 million metric tons, would use up 5.7% of the remaining amount of carbon that the whole world can emit if we're going to keep global temperature increases under 1.5 degrees Celsius.
Wow, that's a big number. I remember when I first saw this conclusion and that percentage of what the whole world can emit to stay at that target 1.5 degree level, I was astonished. And intuitively, again, I think I've always realized that, but to see it in the report really puts an exclamation point on it. So we appreciate you kind of diving into those numbers like that. You know, you mentioned that there are two ways that climate mitigation occurs. In addition to keeping all that carbon in the ground, instead of digging it up and burning it, what's the other factor at play here?
So the second way that climate mitigation occurs is by increasing the amount of carbon that is sequestered or captured and stored by the ecosystem. So we estimated the amount of organic carbon that would be captured and stored in plants and soil on the proposed wilderness lands by the end of the century. We found that these ecosystems currently have organic carbon stocks of about 241 million metric tons of carbon. Most of that is already present in the ecosystem stored in plant biomass and soil. By the end of the century, that number is likely going to be about 10% higher, just over 271 million metric tons. And that's because climate change is expected to cause more areas of land to be covered in trees and shrubs, which store more carbon than the plants that are already there, like grasses. However, the model that we used wasn't able to capture inorganic carbon, which is different from the organic carbon that's stored in plant matter. In Utah, most of the inorganic carbon is captured and stored in caliche, which is formed below desert biocrusts, where chemical reactions occur between fungi and the respiration of carbon dioxide from plant roots and microbes. So these reactions create crystals of calcium carbonate, or caliche, which provides long-term storage of inorganic carbon underground. Inorganic carbon isn't yet well studied, so it's much harder to estimate. But because of its association with desert biocrusts, we know that there is a really significant amount on America's Red Rock Wilderness lands. We did a very rough estimate of the inorganic carbon that might be present on those lands using the few studies that are available. And we found that the amount of inorganic carbon could be double or triple the amount of organic carbon that we modeled. So this suggests that deserts and other arid ecosystems may play a much more significant role in carbon sequestration than is often assumed from calculations that only consider organic carbon in plants and soil. And then finally, we know that disturbances to vegetation, soil, and desert biocrust have significant negative impacts on carbon sequestration and storage. For instance, desert biocrusts are very easily damaged, and that prevents them from facilitating the capture of carbon dioxide and caliche. We also know that warmer, drier climate conditions in the future are going to mean that these ecosystems are less resistant to damage and slower to recover. However, wilderness protection will prevent the human activities that cause this type of ecosystem degradation. And this means that protecting the America's Red Rock Wilderness Act lands from disturbances would maintain intact ecosystems, which maximizes their potential for carbon sequestration and storage that helps mitigate climate change.
Well, this is all very interesting and useful information, Laura. As an activist who worked on protecting wild Utah for a long time, I must say that this is the most confirming data I've ever seen. It not only shows we're on the right track, but it speaks to the urgency the world faces to find and implement solutions to the climate crisis. This report really helps define one large aspect of Utah's role in this global problem, And so we appreciate all the work on this report that you've done, and we appreciate you taking time today to fill us in on the details.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Again, you can find this special report, Contribution of America's Red Rock Wilderness Act to Climate Change Adaptation and Mitigation Efforts, at SUA.org. Click the Issues tab and select Climate and 30 by 30. Wild Utah is recorded at SUA's main office in Salt Lake City on equipment purchased through the generosity of our members. SUA is primarily member-funded. Over 90% of our revenue comes directly from individuals who care about protecting Southern Utah's Red Rock Country. We're proud of that because it keeps our voice independent. If you'd like to help protect Wild Utah today, please head to SUA.org and click the Donate button. We appreciate your support. Wild Utah's theme music, What's Worth, is composed by Moab singer-songwriter Haley Noel Austin. Post-studio production and editing is by Jerry Schmidt. To stay informed about current events at SUA, visit us at SUA.org and click on Get Involved to discover how you can join the movement to protect Wild Utah. To receive information and alerts via text message, text the word UTAH to 52886. That's the word UTAH to the number 52886. Follow the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance on Facebook, on Instagram at Protect Wild Utah, and on Twitter at Southern UT Wild. And be sure to subscribe to the Wild Utah podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. Visit SUA.org/podcast for additional ways to subscribe and to access our archive of previous episodes. On behalf of SUA, I'm Dave Pacheco. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We hope you can join us for the next episode of Wild Utah.